There has never been a better time, nor have there ever been more opportunities for you to achieve all your goals than there are today. I've said this several times in this program. You can do more, be more, and have more in our fast-changing economy with your unique talents and skills that have ever before been possible for you. As I said earlier, we have entered into a golden age that will get better and better in the years ahead. Your job is to develop a prosperity consciousness and an abundance mentality. Your job is to see the world as a vast smorgasbord of potentials and possibilities that you can take advantage of to achieve your financial goals and to realize your full potential. Throughout all of human history, we lived in the agricultural age. All over the world, the predominant industry was agriculture, raising crops and herding animals. Then, in about 1750 in England, the Industrial Revolution began. For the first time, machines could produce more than men working either alone or together. With the invention of the steam engine by James Watt in 1776, the Industrial Revolution took off and the entire world changed in just a few short years. From 1815, the end of the Napoleonic Wars, to 1914, the living standard of the working man in industrial Britain increased 100 times. At no time in human history had wealth creation ever taken place for so many people so rapidly in a single place. Britain went from being a small, isolated island to being the major power in the world on the basis of her industrial production. By 1875, 125 years after the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, England ruled the globe. Fully 25% of the world was under the British flag. And it was all because of Britain's incredible capacity to create wealth through its industrial system. Industrialization spread to every modern country. It was even responsible for the opening of Japan in the last century. Industrialization on the farms dramatically increased agricultural productivity and simultaneously set millions of farm workers free to move to the cities where they could earn more money and enjoy higher standards of living. By the beginning of the 20th century, it was generally assumed that the industrial worker was destined to be the majority figure and the most powerful individual in society. Then, completely unexpectedly, after World War II, the first computer was invented. In one lifetime, we've gone from the industrial to the service to the information to the communication age in one sweep. The speed has been absolutely breathtaking. The entire modern world today is in a state of future shock, and if anything, this speed of change is accelerating. But each new step forward, while eliminating lower paying and less productive jobs on the one hand, creates greater opportunities and higher paying, more interesting jobs on the other. For almost 200 years, people have been predicting that modernization will wipe out jobs and create unemployment. But every technological advance has actually created more jobs than it has eliminated. But these are different jobs, doing different things in different industries and requiring different skills and abilities. In times of rapid change, there are more opportunities for you and I than ever before. A century ago, a person might come out of school, complete an apprenticeship, begin a job, and work at it for the rest of their lives. There would be very little change or alteration in their methods and tools. Today, a person coming out of school will have 14 full-time jobs, averaging 2 years or more each, plus 5 full-time careers doing totally different jobs in totally different industries. 80% of employees in the Western world will be knowledge workers, people who work with their brains rather than with their hands. Less than 20% will be employed making and moving objects. At the same time, industrial production will be higher than ever before. There will be more goods and services available for more people at lower prices and in greater variety than has ever before been imagined. But it will take fewer and fewer people to produce them as we use ever more sophisticated forms of automation and robotics. 40 or 50% of the workforce will be defined as contingency workers. These are men and women who will seldom, if ever, hold a steady job again as long as they live. More and more people will be working on a freelance basis, moving from company to company, job to job as their services are needed. And all of this ferment within the body politic will create countless opportunities for the enterprising and creative minority like yourself. The major shift that has taken place from the industrial age through to today is the shift from the major sources of value being capital and labor to the major sources of value being time and knowledge. I cannot repeat too often that it is your ability to get critical knowledge and to apply it in a timely fashion that is the primary source of value in our society. Time is everything. All successful people today have a sense of urgency. They move fast on ideas and opportunities. They serve their customers quicker than their competitors, and they develop the winning edges that get and keep them the business for the future. Whenever you can see a product or a process that you can offer faster and better than your competitors, you can create an opportunity to begin a business and perhaps build a fortune. The most obvious example of this phenomenon is Domino's Pizza. James Monahan, the founder of Domino's Pizza, had a breakthrough idea some years ago. It occurred to him that when people became hungry for a pizza, they wanted a pizza fast. Monahan began Domino's Pizza by offering guaranteed delivery within 30 minutes. The rest is history. Within a few years, Domino's Pizza swept the nation and Monahan became one of the richest people in the world. And this happened even though there were thousands of competitive pizza parlors on every street corner and in every community. He came up the middle with the concept of speed and became one of the most successful men of his day. Today, virtually every business is straining to find ways to deliver its products and services faster to its customers. Back in the 70s, a business student named Fred Smith wrote a paper that proposed the establishment of a national overnight air letter service. The paper got a C- and Smith barely passed the course. But he had a clear idea that speed and delivery of correspondence was necessary. He went out and spent the next 10 years of his life putting together an overnight delivery service, which became known as Federal Express. By the time he had finished, he had changed the world. Today, Federal Express is as much a part of modern business life as breathing in and breathing out. People in business cannot imagine how they did without Federal Express before it was established, and it was all based on speed. If you can learn how to utilize time better for your customers, you can create wealth-building opportunities that enable you to begin your upward climb to financial independence. A shift that we have made as we enter the communications age is from limited options to unlimited options. This is an incredible thought. Every single idea and possibility that you have ever had could be destroyed tomorrow, and the day after, another 100 or another 1,000 opportunities would arise around you in countless different fields. It used to be thought that if a person tried something and failed, that he or she was pretty much washed up. Today, you can try and fail 100 times. It doesn't matter. As the founder of Nike Running Shoes said, you only have to succeed the last time. The moment that you eventually succeed, all your failures are wiped away as though they never existed. Nobody cares. The key to wealth is adding value. It is to be continually looking for opportunities to increase the value of the activity. Most fortunes are made selling mundane products in established markets and by finding a way to do it better and faster. You don't have to change the entire world. All you have to do is find one small improvement that enables you to serve your customers better than their current suppliers, and you can create an opening that you can use to go all the way to the goal line. Another shift that is necessary today is from limited knowledge to abundant or unlimited knowledge. Since knowledge is power, the people who had specialized knowledge in the past had a tremendous advantage over those who didn't. But today, there are more books written by more experts on more subjects and available in more places and by more media than it ever before existed. Not only can you get every bit of information you ever dreamed of from a large bookstore or library, but you now have access to the Internet and other databases that plug you into the most valuable and current knowledge in the world in a matter of seconds. The more information and knowledge you have, the more you know about what you're going to do and how to do it, the more times you will make the right decisions, and the less times you will make mistakes. Since it's your mistakes that set you back more than anything else, your ability to accumulate information at a rapid rate can virtually assure you that you continue moving onward and upward in your chosen field. Since we've moved from the era where capital and labor represented wealth to the situation where time and knowledge are the major sources of wealth, we've also moved from needing large amounts of capital to being able to start a business or enterprise to being able to start with very little capital at all. In fact, a lot of capital may be dangerous to your economic health. A company that invests many millions of dollars to build a factory may find that a change in technology renders the factory obsolete overnight. It becomes a pile of bricks and mortar with machinery that has little value. On the other hand, knowledge that you can acquire and apply to creating value in the marketplace can be made to grow continually by your adding on to it and refining it as you move forward. Knowledge is such a primary source of value that a person could walk up to customs at Los Angeles International Airport with the ability to create a $1 billion computer empire in his brain and say to the customs agent, "Nothing to declare." Most banks today have no ability to deal with the fact that wealth is intellectual, not physical. Companies generating millions of dollars a year from sophisticated consulting and advisory services based purely on knowledge and experience are unable to get simple lines of credit. Banks are continually asking for real estate, furniture, fixtures, and marketable securities to be used as collateral against loans. They don't realize that these items have no value except for the knowledge behind them that can apply them to some good purpose in the marketplace. We are going through a very interesting and confusing age. You can start a fortune today with less than $100. You can start a multi-level marketing business that is totally dependent upon your ability to work hard and deliver value to your customers. Multi-level marketing and its companion franchising now account for many billions of dollars of retail sales in America alone. Multi-level marketing and franchising concepts are rolling out all over the world. Their major strength is that they put the business owner close to the customer so that the business owner can serve and satisfy the customer in a better, faster way than a larger, less flexible organization possibly could. Many people are starting home-based businesses today, offering goods and services in a more personalized and faster way than larger organizations could offer. Because they have limited overhead, they can often offer better prices as well. People are getting into part-time jobs and secondary sources of income. They're taking licenses as real estate and insurance agents. They're participating in the knowledge revolution and learning the things that they need to know to be able to contribute the critical source of value, the source that lies between their ears. In creating value, a major shift that you must make is from getting to giving, as I mentioned earlier. In evaluating any business opportunity or any activity within your business, you must put the customer in the center of the table and ask continually how your customer will benefit from this particular action or decision. Tom Peters, in his book In Search of Excellence, and in many other books and articles since then, has said that being close to the customer is the most important single way to achieve competitive advantage for any business. When you become an entrepreneur, you make the shift from reactivity to proactivity. You shift from waiting for things to happen to making things happen. Instead of wishing and hoping and praying that somebody or something will come along to help you, you accept complete responsibility for who you are and everything you accomplish, and you go out and you make things happen the way you want them to. Entrepreneurial activity requires action orientation more than anything else. Entrepreneurs are far faster acting than average people. They set a goal, make a plan, and they launch, while other people are still analyzing and doing the numbers. As a result of launching quickly, entrepreneurs get fast feedback from the world around them. This feedback enables them to make corrections, to change their decisions, and to reallocate their resources in a better way. My friend Ken Blanchard says, "Feedback is the breakfast of champions. It is only with rapid feedback that you can learn what you need to learn to make the changes necessary to assure your ultimate success." A 12-year study on entrepreneurial success concluded that the key to success was called the corridor principle. This corridor principle was based on the idea that when an entrepreneur begins, he or she starts moving down a corridor of opportunity toward a distant goal, usually financial independence. But as the entrepreneur moves, other doors of opportunity open up on either side. The entrepreneur, however, would not have seen these other doors of opportunity if he had not launched himself down the corridor in the first place with no guarantee of success. Most people who succeed in business succeed in a totally different area doing a totally different thing and often for a completely different customer market than they started out doing. But it was their forward momentum that gave them the necessary and timely feedback that enabled them to make the critical changes as they moved ahead. Entrepreneurs have made the shift today from making excuses to making progress. They keep themselves focused on what it is they want to accomplish rather than who it was that made a particular mistake or dropped a particular ball. The key to entrepreneurship requires another shift today, the shift from competition to cooperation. It used to be that entrepreneurs would guard their ideas jealously and not tell anybody what they were doing. Today, successful entrepreneurs lay their ideas out in front of their bankers, accountants, friends, and even their competitors, and ask for their advice. they go to potential customers and ask them what it would take to get them to buy from them. Entrepreneurs today are always looking to work cooperatively with other small and large business people to exploit market opportunities. And the more open they are with their ideas to others, the more valuable feedback they get that guards them against making fatal mistakes caused by ignorance, especially the fatal mistake of losing money. Entrepreneurial thinking today also requires a shift from in-house production to outsourcing. A few years ago, it was common to think of hiring people and doing everything yourself. Today, the smartest of all entrepreneurs think about hiring no one and getting everything done on the outside by people who specialize in that particular function. To be successful as an entrepreneur, you must move from building empires to building fortunes. There are countless people throughout the United States who run extremely successful businesses from home offices, outsourcing every other part of their business but the brain work, which they do themselves. A very successful businesswoman in New England came up with an idea for a line of gourmet fast foods. She was an excellent cook and she had some excellent recipes. She perfected the recipes in her own kitchen and then went to a professional food service organization and contracted with them to make the products in large quantities. She then made a contract with a packaging company to package the products for shipping and delivery to food stores. She made another contract with a wrapping company to do all the design work. She made a fourth contract with a food distribution wholesaler to carry her lines along with other lines when their representatives called on grocery stores. She hired a business management firm to take care of all the accounting, and then she set up a personal computer with a modem in her home to coordinate all the various activities. Today, she runs a multi-million-dollar business from her home with no staff. Everything is outsourced through other companies. I've come to the conclusion that the decision to think almost exclusively in terms of outsourcing is one of the most important mental approaches that you can make to success in business. This means that your fixed costs are low, 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 while your upside is virtually unlimited. If anything happens to the market or to your product or service, it can collapse altogether and you are completely safe from financial harm. Your fixed costs are minimal. Of course, a critical shift that you must make to take advantage of the opportunities surrounding you is moving from your comfort zone into the risk zone. You must have the courage to go boldly where no man or woman has ever gone before. You must be willing to try things that are new and different with no guarantee of success. You must be willing to toss and turn at night wondering how things are going to work out if you're going to make any progress at all. Fortunately, if you stay in the risk zone long enough, you become comfortable there. In fact, if you're lucky, you will come to thrive on risk and uncertainty. You will look for opportunities, take on challenges and difficulties that other people would normally shy away from. You'll become more and more confident in your brains and knowledge and your ability to deal with any situation. You'll develop the habit of ignoring people who tell you something can't be done or that it's been tried already or that it's too expensive or some other reason for not taking action. As you become comfortable out there in the risk zone, your entire focus will be on reasons why rather than reasons why not. The key skill for success in entrepreneurial activities is the ability to sell. And this is a very interesting subject. I've been teaching sales to hundreds of thousands of people for many years. I run into people in sales who are actually embarrassed about being in the field at all. I run into people who are not in sales who very much admire the profession. Success Magazine did a study not long ago and found that fully 42% of the respondents said that if they weren't doing what they were doing right now, they would rather be in selling. A high-tech company in New Jersey had a woman in accounting who was continually asking for an opportunity to sell. They kept telling her that an accountant wouldn't have the temperament necessary to sell in a high-tech industry. She badgered them until they finally allowed her to take over for a salesman during his 2-week vacation during the summertime. She went on to become so successful at selling that she was soon the top salesperson in the company. Within another year, she represented fully 40% of the total sales of that business. She was so successful at selling that the company was actually unable to go public because so much of its business was dependent on a single person. Many people think that they are not particularly good at selling. The fact is that virtually anybody can be absolutely excellent at the profession of selling if they really want to. A person who doesn't like selling is usually a person who has not learned how to do it properly. If you become very good at selling, you start to enjoy it more and more. If you are good at it, you will succeed at it, and the feeling of success will cause you to feel like a winner most of the time. Success in selling is one of the most exhilarating experiences you can have. If you want to break free of the crowd and get started in your own business enterprise, you have to learn how to sell well. Fortunately, you can listen to audio cassettes like My Psychology of Selling. You can read books, attend courses, and get advice from other people. If you're really determined to be a financial success through entrepreneurial activity, you can learn the selling skills you need to control your own destiny. An article in Inc. magazine a couple of years ago said that if you have the ability to sell and you are not in your own business, you're crazy. I don't know if it's as cut and dried as that, but if you have the ability to sell, you are certainly qualified to do and be far more than you are today. There are 7 main areas where you can add value to a personal or business process and thereby create an opportunity to build a successful business. The first, as I mentioned before, is in the area of time saving. Whenever you can find a faster, better, cheaper, easier way to increase the speed and efficiency with which a product or service is delivered, you can create a business opportunity, like driving in a wedge. Many of the greatest fortunes in America, like Domino's Pizza, have been based on speed. All of the high-tech innovations coming out of Silicon Valley revolve around creating faster ways to accomplish the same processing of information. A second area where you can find a business opportunity is regarding the comfort of the customer. Anytime you can create a way for people to live and work in a more comfortable fashion, you can create a business opportunity. We know today that when people are comfortable living and working, they're more productive and happy. This emotional feeling of happiness is an economic value for which individuals and corporations will pay. Furniture, outdoor equipment, camping equipment, automobiles, boats, airplanes, houses, and 1,000 other things are sold on the basis of how comfortable they are for the ultimate user. A third area of entrepreneurial activity is in the area of security. Whenever you can find a way to increase the mental, emotional, physical, or financial security of individuals, you can create a business opportunity. Hundreds of millions of dollars are being made every year in the sales of security systems of all kinds. All forms of life insurance, savings, and investment accounts are aimed at increasing the financial security of the individual, both in the present and in the future. Wherever you can see a risk that exists and you can find a product or service that can alleviate or minimize that risk, you can create a business opportunity. A fourth entrepreneurial opportunity lies in the entire area of vanity, ego, beauty, and weight loss. We, as individuals, are extremely concerned with how we look and feel and how long we live. Customers are extremely open to any product or service that makes them look or feel better in any way. If you can find a health, beauty, or nutritional product that is equal to or better than anything on the market, and you can sell it vigorously, you will find hundreds and perhaps even thousands of customers who are ready and willing to buy it and pay you for it. A fifth entrepreneurial opportunity lies in the area of success, prosperity, and wealth building. Everyone, like yourself, wants to be financially independent. They want to be better off tomorrow than they were today. They want to solve their financial problems and create a financial estate. Whenever you can find a product or service that helps people to be more successful or more prosperous, or that helps them to create wealth on either a full or part-time basis, you can create customers and a business. A sixth business opportunity area lies in sports and physical fitness. People very much enjoy both watching sports and participating in them. There are huge markets opening up for exercise equipment and products on the one hand, and for opportunities to observe and participate in sporting activities on the other. The seventh area where you can create entrepreneurial value is in leisure and recreation. In combination with saving time, comfort, vanity, success, fitness, and so on, selling or offering any kind of leisure time activity can create a business opportunity. The starting point of all entrepreneurial success is for you to look around you and think about what it is that people would buy if it was available and would solve a problem that they had. Look for things that irritate people or frustrate them. Many people are developing large businesses by grocery shopping for working couples. Some catering firms are preparing entire dinners for couples who want to stay home or to entertain friends. There are even massage therapists who visit offices to conduct their activities on site where people often need them the most. Every conceivable product or service can be marketed if it satisfies a need that is not currently being satisfied. To find an opportunity for entrepreneurial activity, you need to first look inside yourself. What sort of things do you most enjoy doing, buying, selling, talking about, and learning about? You will always be successful doing something that attracts and holds your attention and interest. You enjoy thinking about it and talking about it and offering it to others. Especially, it'll be something that you enjoy using yourself. Many people have found an opportunity to create a fortune by taking something that they really enjoy personally and turning it into a business. Look into yourself for your own personal, unique selling proposition. What is your personal area of excellence? What are your unique skills? What sort of things do you do easily and well that seem to be difficult for other people? You'll always be most successful in a business where you really love and enjoy the product or service, and you really like and enjoy the kind of people who use the product or service. The very best operators of ski resorts, for example, are people who really enjoy skiing and who very much enjoy other skiers. The very best operators of restaurants are people who very much enjoy the process of cooking delicious food, and they derive tremendous pleasure from serving excellent food to their customers. Remember that question. What would you do? How would you change your life if you won $1 million cash tomorrow? Imagine that you were given $1 million under one condition. You would have to select the business activity you were going to go into to continue making a living. Under these circumstances, what would it be for you? If you go into any business at all, selling any product or service to any type of customer, what would be your first choice? What would be your second choice? What would be your third choice? You know the old saying with regard to investment, investigate before you invest. Once you have an idea of the kind of business you would like to be in, your next job is to go out and begin gathering information. You don't have to quit your day job until you're firmly established in something else, but you can save yourself an enormous amount of time and money by doing your research in advance. The primary reason that new businesses fail is because of lack of business knowledge and experience. The primary reason that new businesses succeed is because of previous business knowledge and experience. If you have never been in business for yourself before, you should align yourself with other people or another organization that has years of experience and that can share it with you. Dun & Bradstreet has been studying success and failure amongst businesses for more than 50 years. Recently, they took all of their information and ran it through a computer and came to a simple conclusion. Businesses succeed because of high sales. Businesses fail because of low sales. Everything else is commentary. Whenever you see an opportunity to assemble and sell a product or service to someone and to offer them something that they cannot get from anywhere else, you can create a business opportunity and the beginning of a fortune. The opportunities for entrepreneurial activity have never been greater in all of our lives than they are today. It is up to you to become business and opportunity oriented and to see the entire world around you as bristling with possibilities for you to achieve all your financial goals. When you develop the mindset of abundance and a prosperity consciousness, you will soon find opportunities to turn your dreams into realities. There's no area in our society where rapid change and obsolescence is having a greater impact than in the world of business and management. According to Harvard University, there will be more change, more competition, and more opportunity in the next 12 months in your field, whatever it is, than there ever has been before. In addition, fully 72% of people working today will be in different jobs within 12 months if they don't rapidly adapt to the change and competition in their fields. It used to be that change was slow and evolutionary. Managers could make long-term decisions and even set strategic plans that covered several years. Today, however, no strategic plan survives an entire year of business activity intact. It's almost impossible to do tight time planning for more than 12 months out. An entire strategic plan may be rendered obsolete overnight by an announcement of a new technology that obsoletes the core activities of a business. We have never seen such rapid, unpredictable, continuous change in our lives, and, if anything, it's going to get faster and more unpredictable in the months and years ahead. Business is based on the application of knowledge to work and productivity. The better you think in business, the better results you get and the more profitable you are. And thinking in business is determined by the quality and quantity of thinking tools that you have available to you. The ability to add and subtract is a thinking tool. The ability to write or to make presentations is a thinking tool. The ability to organize a meeting and to communicate are thinking tools. The more and better thinking tools that you gather and become conversant with, the more productive you are, the more effective is your work, the more you will be paid, and the more profitable will be your business and your area of responsibility. Let's start off with a key question. What is the purpose of a business? Many people think that the purpose of a business is to make a profit. However, making a profit is the result, not the purpose of the business. The purpose of a business, in its simplest terms, is to create and keep a customer. A business is successful to the degree to which it creates customers in a cost-effective way. If a business fails to keep and create customers for any period of time, it will soon become a part of economic history. Even the biggest and most profitable businesses in the world today quickly run into serious problems if they lose sight of their central purpose, which is to create and keep a customer. Your job, whatever you do, is to create and keep a customer as well. As a manager, you are placed in a position of responsibility to achieve certain results that other people can use in their own lives and work. The people who use what you produce are your customers. Peter Drucker defines an executive as a person who is responsible for results. By this definition, you can be an executive without having any staff of your own, as long as you are absolutely clear that you are responsible for results, and you are clear about what those results actually are. Everything you learn is geared to help you achieve a higher quality and quantity of results so that you can have a higher quality and quantity of rewards. Perhaps the most momentous shift in business today is from occasional change to continuous change. The onrush of competition, combined with increasing customer impatience and demand, has created a rate of accelerated change that we have never seen before. In the last 12 months, fully 25% of the Fortune 500 companies changed. Companies that may have taken decades to get to Fortune 500 status have been elbowed aside by young upstarts such as Microsoft and Intel in just a few years. Some Fortune 500 companies are growing so rapidly into world-class status that you don't even know their names or their activities. The most important thing you can do in a world of continuous change is to remain flexible, fluid, and adaptive. You need to be open-minded and look upon every change, even if it initially appears as a challenge, a threat, or a setback, as containing within it an opportunity for you to learn and grow and to do something new and better. Superior thinkers have superior lives and superior careers. And perhaps the most important single quality you can develop to live in a world of breathtaking change is the quality of lifelong flexibility. Businesses today are moving from reorganizing occasionally to reorganizing continually. Reorganizing means that you are continually moving people, resources, and activities around to achieve higher levels of output per unit of input. You remain open to the very likely possibility that there are better, faster, easier ways to get the same job done with fewer resources. You are in a state of continuously reorganizing yourself, your work, and the activities around you. The key to reorganizing is to be absolutely clear about your basic values, your vision, and your mission for your business or your part of the business. These are the things that should never change or only change with careful consideration over a period of time. Your values may be defined as integrity, quality, service, people, and profitability. Your vision may be to be a leader in your product or service area and in your marketplace. Your mission may be to become known as the highest quality and quantity producer of your goods and services based on comparisons with your competitors sometime in the future. When you're clear about your values, vision, and mission, you can then feel free to reorganize your various resources so that you're continually more capable of fulfilling those values, that vision, and that mission. It's only when companies and individuals are unclear about what they stand for and where they're going that reorganizations cause confusion, disruption, and demoralization. If you and everyone around you knows what you stand for and realize that every reorganization is an attempt to better achieve those higher goals, you'll have far higher levels of support than you would otherwise. We have shifted from occasional restructuring to continuous restructuring. Restructuring can be defined as moving more and more resources closer and closer to the production of the goods and services that customers want the most and are most willing to pay for. Simultaneously, restructuring requires that you minimize, diminish, outsource, and eliminate activities that are distant from the satisfying of customer needs. Remember, everything you do is to create and keep a customer. All of your success comes from customer satisfaction. This is your sole business. It is to define exactly who your customer is, what your customer wants, and then to give it to your customer in such a form that your customer is happy enough to continue buying from you in the future and to refer you to others who can also become your customers. We've shifted from occasionally re-engineering to continuously re-engineering. Re-engineering has been defined as the business of process analysis. This is where you look at the processes and procedures that you use to get from point A to point B, from where you are to your goal of customer satisfaction. You can use re-engineering in order processing, manufacturing, distribution, selling, product development, and in almost every other area. The very best and simplest way to use re-engineering is to make a list of all the steps necessary to perform a particular process or to achieve a particular result. You then organize this list in sequence from the first step to the final step. You can take this list and organize it as a series of boxes moving across the page from left to right with arrows going from one box to the next and sometimes back again as you move from the initiation of the task to its completion. Once you've drawn out this kind of schematic, you then look at how you can consolidate various steps, eliminate various steps, outsource various steps, or even discontinue various steps altogether. When you begin re-engineering your work and even your personal life, you will find that you can eliminate about 30% of the steps the first time through the activity. You will find newer, better, faster, and easier ways to get the job done with a smaller expenditure of time and money. Individuals and companies that practice re-engineering on a regular basis find themselves able to get more and more done at higher and higher value in less and less time. It's one of the great secrets to competitive success in our fast-changing marketplace today. We've also moved from occasionally reinventing our business to continually reinventing our business. Robert Kriegel wrote a book recently entitled, If It Ain't Broke, Break It. Today, if it isn't broke, you should be thinking of breaking it even if you don't have to. Companies like 3M, Sony Corporation, Johnson & Johnson, and others have a standard policy that more than 20% of revenues have to come each year from products that did not exist 2 or 3 years ago. Gillette Corporation is famous for continually striving to put itself out of business by inventing products that render its current products obsolete. In reinventing your business, imagine that all of your products became either obsolete or illegal the day after tomorrow. If you had to take all of your existing resources, your people, knowledge, experience, and markets, and walk across the street to create a whole new business, what new products and processes would you think of developing, and what new markets would you think of going into? Thinking in these terms keeps you fluid and flexible and alert and aware to the possibilities and opportunities of the future. Thinking like this helps to keep you out of the kind of comfort zone and complacency that is inevitably fatal to individuals and organizations in our fast-moving times. We've moved from occasional re-evaluation to continuous re-evaluation of our business, everything we do, and everyone associated with the business, both inside and out. Re-evaluation is often forced on you when you experience continuous frustrations in your marketplace, especially frustrations involving your customers and your competitors. In re-evaluating your business activities, you continually use the zero-based thinking tool that I described in an earlier session. As you recall, in zero-based thinking, you continually ask, if we were not in this business today, would we get into it? Or you ask, if we were not now selling this product, knowing what we now know, would we introduce it? Many companies are engaged in business activities and manufacturing and selling products to particular customers and markets that, knowing what they now know, they wouldn't even get into in the first place. If you're in such a situation, it will get progressively worse as time passes. It will never get better. The longer you stay in a situation that you wouldn't even get into if you had to do it over, the more time, money, energy, emotion, and resources you will use up, and the less flexibility you will have to take advantage of other opportunities. Continuously reevaluate your situation and be willing to abandon any activity that you wouldn't get into in the first place if you had to do it again. We've also moved from occasionally refocusing to continually refocusing in every area of our business lives. The secret to business success is and always has been the ability to concentrate single-mindedly on the one or two things that make more of a difference than everything else put together. This is the essence of the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle that says that 20% of your activities will account for 80% of your results. And it's probably more extreme than that. Your job is to clearly and continuously identify the one or two things that you and your company can do that, if done well, will make a real difference in the marketplace. Simultaneously, you must continuously abandon those areas that represent low-value utilization of your scarce resources. Again, this requires moving from occasional zero-based thinking to continuous zero-based thinking. What should you be getting into? And what should you be getting out of? What should you be doing more of? And what should you be doing less of? The wonderful result of continuously reorganizing, restructuring, re-engineering, reinventing, re-evaluating, and refocusing on a regular basis is the regaining of control that you experience in your work. By using your mind to think better about who you are and what it is that you need to do to create and keep a customer, you gain an ever better sense of control over your financial and managerial destiny. You put yourself into the position of making things happen rather than just letting them happen and hoping for the best. We have also shifted from the era of gradual obsolescence to the era of rapid obsolescence. Today, if it works, it's already obsolete. It's already yesterday's product or service. If it works, it means that it's profitable. If it's profitable, it means that a competitor will be working day and night to find a superior replacement that he can bring to the marketplace to take away your customers. The very best companies are continually working to obsolete themselves. The minute they release a new product, they go back to the drawing boards and begin working on the next, higher version of that product. When you buy a computer today, it has a shelf life of approximately 4 months. Within 4 to 6 months, the computer will be obsolete. This means that there will be a computer at a same or lesser price that will do more things better and faster than the computer you just bought. The basic rule in high technology is that today's state-of-the-art product will be scrap in 3 years. This doesn't mean that it will not be usable in 3 years. It simply means that because of the incredible improvements that take place in new technology, it will cost you more to use the old technology than it would to replace it with new technology. And this will happen every 36 months or even faster. All of these changes have led to a series of shifts in the way we look at our products, our processes, our procedures, and our people. The executives who make these shifts the fastest and who incorporate these new ways of thinking into their work styles will be the ones who will rise to the top in every organization. One important shift that affects everything you do is the shift from complication to simplification. This requires the continual looking for ways to reduce the number of steps that it takes for you to accomplish a goal or result. Even Socrates postulated that the very best solution is the one that achieves the result with the fewest number of steps, or which is the simplest to explain. In my theory of complexity, I point out that the possible cost, number of mistakes, and length of time to achieve any result is the square of the number of steps involved in achieving that result. Let me explain. For example, if you decide to make a telephone call, and you do it, there is only one step involved. Therefore, it is one squared, or a single, simple process with one step. However, if you ask someone else to make a phone call, the level of complexity jumps from a complexity of one to a complexity of two squared, or a potential for problems, costs, misunderstandings, and time at a level of four, or two times two, two squared. If a process moves from two steps to three steps, the complexity factor jumps dramatically. It jumps from a possible complexity factor of 4 to 3 squared, or a factor of 9 possibilities for mistakes, misunderstandings, cost, delay, and problems. For example, if you ask someone to ask someone else to make a phone call on a particular subject, the likelihood of there being problems and misunderstandings with the message you are trying to communicate increases dramatically. And it goes on and on. With 4 steps in a process, the complexity factor goes to 4 squared, or 16. With 5 steps, the complexity factor jumps to 25, or 5 squared. Anytime you can reduce even a single step in a process, you can dramatically reduce the likely time, effort, and expense that will be involved in achieving that particular result. This is why all movement toward high performance is also a movement toward simplification of whatever process or set of activities you are engaged in. One of the most powerful ways that companies are doing this is by making the shift from job complexity involving several people to achieve a particular result to job simplicity, where a single person is responsible for several results. This is called time compression via job expansion. For example, a major insurance company used to take 6 weeks to process a life insurance application once it came in from the field. This was frustrating both for the insurance salespeople and for the client, who never knew until it was finished whether or not he or she was insured. The insurance company did a time and motion study of the processing of the application form. They found that the total amount of time spent processing the actual application form was exactly 17 minutes. But because so many people were checking and double-checking, the process was taking 6 weeks. They immediately revisited the entire process and consolidated all of the checking and rechecking activities into a single job description for a single person. From that day forward, they could process an insurance application form in less than a day and have an answer back to the field. Citibank of New York decided to get into the residential mortgage business. At that time, it was taking 30 to 60 days for the average mortgage company to give an approval or disapproval for a mortgage application. Citibank used job compression by responsibility expansion to consolidate all of the approval process in a single person. As a result, they were able to give an answer back in less than 24 hours. When the word got out to the real estate community, virtually every mortgage application in the state went to Citibank first. Their mortgage lending activity jumped to over $1 billion, and they captured a substantial part of the market by simply reducing the amount of time it took to serve the customer with what he or she wanted. And this is the key to great success in anything you do as well. The shift in management thinking with regard to staff in the last few years have been equally as dramatic. The major shift has been from individual effort to team effort. The shift has been from individuals in isolation, in competition with the people around them for the positions and perks within the organizations, to functioning excellently as part of the team committed to achieving company objectives. Today, the number one skill for promotion and advancement in any organization is that of being a team player. Your ability to perform as part of a team when you're on the way up, and then to manage a team and get results as you move into a position of responsibility, will do more to help your career than any other single activity. All work today is done by teams. The team's output is the manager's output. The people on your team are not part of your work assignment, they are your work assignment. Your ability to select good team members and to coordinate their activities so that you get the best out of each one to achieve results for your company and your customers is probably the most valuable contribution that you can make. If you can do it extremely well, you have an unlimited future anywhere and virtually under any circumstances in the world of organizations. This shift to team effort has also shifted work from hierarchies of authority to flattened pyramids and shared responsibility. The standard model of management popular for many years came from the command and control model that was popularized in World War II. This command and control model had a president or chief executive at the top, with several levels of other managers under the chief executive all the way down to the individual employee on the shop floor. The job of middle managers was to coordinate information and activities between the various levels. This has almost disappeared in most organizations today. In organizations that are surviving and thriving in today's competitive marketplace, the hierarchy is being gradually squashed and flattened, with layers of middle management being pushed out and laid off permanently. More and more authority is devolving to the people who actually do the work, and the barriers to communication between them and the managers above them are being dramatically diminished, therefore eliminating the need for middle managers to act as communicators and facilitators. I was consulting with a large company just recently where the senior manager had 25 employees reporting to him directly. And he was able to do an excellent job because of the use of Teams, email, regular face-to-face meetings with individuals, and especially by sharing responsibility with the employees so that they felt empowered to do their job without constantly referring back to the boss for approval or permission. There are three keys to shared responsibility. The first is shared values. With shared values, everyone knows what the values are that the company believes in, stands for, and is committed to living by. The second is shared objectives. Everyone knows what the goals are based on the values. Everyone knows who the key customers are, and that the aim is to get more products to more customers in a cost-effective way. The third requirement for shared responsibility is shared plans. As a result of continuous meetings and discussions, everyone knows what everyone else is expected to do. Everyone knows what their job is and how it fits into the total responsibilities of the department or organization. Of course, the establishment of shared responsibility based on shared values, shared objectives, and shared plans is the essence of effective teamwork and team leadership. Today, there's been a shift from top-down management to participative management. This means that people get an opportunity to think about and discuss the work in advance. Everyone contributes their best ideas. Once the goals and objectives are agreed upon, there is a good deal of discussion and debate on the best way that the team can organize itself to achieve those goals and objectives. The manager or team leader serves as a facilitator or orchestra conductor. He or she is a member of the team rather than the director or dictator of the team. The best team leaders, according to several years of research, see themselves as blockers, or people whose job it is to remove the obstacles to performance from the paths of the other people on the team. The team leader continually looks for newer, better, faster ways to help the team members to perform at their best. The team leader recognizes that his or her job is not to do it, but to enable others to get it done by making sure that they have the time, support, and the resources that they need to perform their jobs in an excellent fashion. High performance in management requires the shift from constraints and bottlenecks to breakthroughs and improved performance. Constraints and bottlenecks exist in every organization and in every activity. These are the limiting factors or steps that determine the speed at which you achieve your goal. Breakthroughs come from identifying those constraints to high performance and then focusing all of your attention and energy on those constraints in order to alleviate them so that the production process can flow smoothly once again. A company that's getting a lot of orders but is having problems fulfilling the orders finds that the bottleneck is the order processing department. In the order processing department, the bottleneck can be the number of staff or the speed of technology. The manager either gets more staff or computers or both in order to relieve this constraint so that the company can acquire and fulfill as many orders as possible. What are your constraints? What are the bottlenecks in your work that are setting the speed at which you achieve your goals? If you want to be more profitable, is one of your bottlenecks the level of sales? If so, what can you do to increase the level of sales? If the bottleneck is in sales, is it your advertising, or the ability of your salespeople to follow up and follow through, or the position of your product in the marketplace? What do you have to do to increase the speed at which you achieve your business goals? Whatever the answer is to that is a definition of your bottleneck. Your job as a manager is to identify it and then to alleviate it. By eliminating bottlenecks, you make the shift from gradual improvement to quantum leaps in improvement. The very best companies do not do things hundreds of percents better, but they do hundreds of things 1% better each. You can make quantum leaps in performance by introducing the process of Kaizen, or continuous improvement. Kaizen means that every day in every way you are looking for better ways to achieve the same result. Someone once called this the relentless pursuit of excellence, and that is a wonderful expression to characterize excellent managers in today's marketplace. Your job is to engage every day in the relentless pursuit of excellence in everything you do and in everything that the people around you do as well. By pursuing excellence, you make the next shift, which is from keeping up with the competition to leading the field. Your goal should be to achieve world-class standards in whatever you do. Even if you run a small business in a small industry in a small town, your vision should be to be the very best in the world at what you do. Anything else than a continuing commitment to excellence gradually becomes a complacent acceptance of mediocrity. When you set excellence as your standard, you look around you and you benchmark or compare yourself against the very best in your field. You never allow yourself the false luxury of rationalizing your performance by saying that you are as good as someone else. Only excellence, only the very best, is your standard. The pursuit of excellence takes you from trying to develop multiple competencies to focusing on core competencies. Your core competencies are the things that you absolutely, positively have to do well in order to stay in business in your industry. These will vary depending upon what you are doing and where you are doing it, but there are always specific core competencies that you absolutely have to thrive and grow in a competitive business. The question is, what are yours? What do you absolutely, positively have to be excellent at in order to be a real player in your field? What is your unique selling proposition? What is your area of excellence? What is it that you do or should do in an absolutely superior fashion if you want to be seen as a market leader by your customers? Your ability to ask and answer these questions, the keys to differentiating yourself from your competition, is the determining factor in your success in business. All individuals and all companies, as well as all departments of companies, must have areas of unique, distinct core competency in order to lead the field. Your job is to decide what your marketplace most values and will pay for, and then to develop that competency to a high point. One of the things that always amazes me is that companies that are totally dependent on their sales for their very existence are casual or indifferent to the recruiting and continuous training of their salespeople. Every company owes it to itself to have a world-class sales force, and this is only possible by training your people continuously every week and even every day until they are the very best in the industry. The creation and maintenance of a world-class sales organization has done more to move companies into world-class contention than any other single factor. You could have the finest products and services in the world, but if you don't have the finest salespeople in the business, you will be eaten alive by your competition every day, every week, every month, and every year. Because the purpose of your business is to create and keep a customer, another major shift is from selling products and services to selling competence and credibility. The fact is that whatever you sell, there are lots of other companies, both nationally and internationally, that can sell roughly the same product or service at roughly the same price, or even lower. How then do you differentiate yourself from your competition? The only real way is by selling your customers on your levels of competence and credibility, the fact that you are very good at what you do and that you are a totally reliable company to deal with in every respect. We teach salespeople the new model of selling in all of our courses. The new model of selling is based on trust. The more the customer trusts you, believes in you, and depends upon you to fulfill your commitments and keep your word, the more likely it is that the customer will continue to deal with you, even if competitors offer better prices and even if you make an occasional mistake. Trust is the glue that holds all relationships together, especially customer relationships. The key to creating and keeping customers is to build and maintain high levels of trust and credibility. And this must be built into everything the company does from its first word of advertising to its last effort of service. The development of trust leads to moving from building sales to building long-term relationships. Since all successful companies are those who continue to sell more and more of their products and services to more and more of the same people, the maintenance of long-term relationships has to be a central focus of everything the company does. This shifts your company from profiteering to partnering, from concentrating on making the most money from the single sale to positioning yourself as a partner in the heart and mind of your customer and working with that customer for the long term. Customers today want to see their suppliers as participants in their lives and work. Customers today want to work with individuals and companies that they can rely on. In fact, customers will pay a lot for the psychic value of feeling absolutely comfortable in working with a particular company and individual. On the other hand, a customer cannot buy from someone that they do not like and trust, no matter how good the offer. The very best individuals and companies focus on building the quality of the emotional bond between the customer and the company before they try to emphasize the product or service or what it can do. This shift from competition to collaboration is the hallmark of high-performance individuals and companies. It leads to bringing your customer away from thinking in terms of multiple suppliers to thinking in terms of a single supplier, yourself. W. Edward Deming, the quality guru who died in 1993, continually recommended that companies look to establish long-term single supplier relationships with one company that will partner with them and work with them to give them the quality and quantity of products and services they need over the long term. Your job is to position yourself in this way with your customer so that your customer views you as an extension of his or her life and business. Once the customer has this perception of you, the customer will never go anywhere else. This is the shift from building a business to building a reputation. This is the focus that you must have to become the most respected supplier of your product or service in your marketplace. The better a view your customers have of you in the marketplace, the more of your product you will sell at lower cost and the more profitable you will be. Finally, everything we've talked about requires that you shift from occasional innovation and improvement to continuous innovation and improvement. This is the key to the future. Continuous innovation and improvement enables you to move from setting the pace to setting the example in your marketplace. Even as a small company, you can become known as the trendsetter, the company that others have to emulate and compete with if they want to survive in an era of rapid change. The opportunities available in business today for the creative minority of men and women are absolutely extraordinary. When you make the mental shift from the old school of management to the new school of innovation and entrepreneurship, you begin to see the entire world as a cornucopia of possibilities that you can turn to your advantage and to the advantage of your company. When you become an advanced thinker in the field of management and executive performance, you will eventually outstrip your competition and lead the field in anything you decide to do.